Mark chapter 5, verse 19. Jesus tells the man that has been healed of demon possession to go home and tell them how much the Lord has done for you. But I want to talk to you about the story starting chapter 5. Now I want to mention July in chapter 4. That fascinating story about Jesus and his soul near the Sea of Galilee. And they encounter a huge storm that's ready to capsize the boat. But Jesus is fast asleep right there in the boat. He's sleeping right through the whole thing. And the disciples are frantic. They're panicked. And what are we going to do? And Jesus, wake up. Don't you care? We're all going to die here. We're going to all drown here. And Jesus stands up and looks around and he just says, peace, be still. And the whole storm stopped. And they were amazed and they worshiped him and they said, who is this man that even the winds and the waves obey him? Now, I don't know if the man in our story here saw that happen. You know, they were just about to the shore there when that happened. So maybe he witnessed this. I don't know. But it says they went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit or unclean spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he had often been chained hand and foot. But he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. And no one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. Look at the map here in Israel. You see the Sea of Galilee there. And off to the right, you see the Gergesa. That's where they were heading, across the lake. And interesting enough, Jesus went across the lake to help this one man. But as soon as he got done, what did he do? Got in the boat and left. He came and healed this man. Got in the boat and left. So Jesus is willing to come for just one person, isn't he? Cares about everybody. Doesn't have to have massive crowds. So he goes there to Gergesa. And so the boat lands. And here comes this man running out of the cemetery. Running out of the tombs. And goes on to say he's naked. Cuts himself with stones. Screaming and hollering and carrying on. Now what would you think if you were coming down the street and somebody came running like that, came at you? That happens every once in a while, doesn't it? Sometimes that happens in some of the cities where somebody's really deep in drugs and that kind of thing, and they act that way. But he comes running to Jesus. And Luke chapter 8, verse 27 says, when Jesus stepped ashore, he was met by a demon-possessed man from the town. For a long time, this man had not worn clothing or lived in a house, but he stayed in the tombs. Now, you're talking about a guy that's destructive to himself. You're looking at a guy that's destructive to everybody else. He's dangerous. Nobody wants anything to do with him. He's separate from society. He's a nuisance. He's a threat. Everybody's afraid of him. Are there people like that today that are just bound up with all kinds of stuff in their life where they're really hard to get along with and nobody wants to associate with them and nobody wants to talk to them, be around them? You're afraid of them. They're hurting themselves. They hurt everybody around them. They're dangerous in their behaviors and what they're doing. I think there's a lot of people like that. And it's not always obvious who those people are, but there's a lot of people like that. And so this man comes running to Jesus, and it says he fell down and worshipped him. Now, I don't know why he worshipped him. Did he know who Jesus was? Had he seen what Jesus did with that storm when he said, peace be still? And the way, maybe this guy that can control the weather, maybe he can help me out here. But he comes and runs to Jesus, and they tried binding him with chains, and it didn't work. He'd tear the chains apart. Kind of reminds you of Samson, doesn't it? They bound him, he could break them apart. And he's supernatural strength. And he takes rocks and cuts himself with the rocks. You don't want people to do that. There's some people who take razor blades or knives or things and they cut themselves. They're hurting so bad inside mentally, spiritually, that they cut themselves in order to try to relieve the pain. And it's just a terrible thing. And there's people that do that. I've known people that have done that. And that's what this guy does. He cuts himself with rocks, sharp rocks. And he shouts out and he screams. Can you imagine at nighttime going around there and you hear this guy in the tombs just screaming at the top of his lungs and just shouting and screaming and crying out? And I mean, it's a pretty desperate situation, isn't it? The guy's in despair. He's depressed. He's violent. He's sick. He's everything you can think of. Where a person's really in bondage and in slavery to their passions and to in this case, demons, what he had. Beginning in verse 6, we read, and when he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him, and he shouted at the top of his voice, what do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me. For Jesus said to him, come out of this man, you impure spirit. And then Jesus asking him said, what's your name? And he said, my name is Legion, for we are many. Legion was a lot. A Roman legion would be up to 6,000 soldiers. And I don't know if he had 6,000 demons or not, but he had a lot. There's actually going to be enough to do take care of 2,000 pigs in there. He had a lot of demons. He was just one, not one demon. He had a lot of demons in him. And his name was Legion. And so really, he had a number for a name, didn't he? Kind of like when you're in prison, you don't go visit John Smith. You go visit inmate number 1037453, right? That's so you'd have a number for your name. That's what he had, a number for his name. He's Legion. And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. So it's really this man speaking, but it's really not him speaking, is it? It's the demons inside of him speaking. And do they know who Jesus is? Oh yeah, they recognize him. They recognized him and who he was even before the apostles did. They knew this is the Son of God. And they knew why he came too, didn't they? They knew he came to torture them in hell. And they said, don't do it now. Don't do it now. Let us go for now. And so they call upon him to do that. And a large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. And the demons begged Jesus, send us among the pigs and allow us to go into them. And he gave them permission. And the impure spirits came out and went into the pigs. And the herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. So here's this herd of pigs that, I don't know if these are Gentiles taking care of, but if they were Jews, they were doing the wrong thing, weren't they? They shouldn't have had the pigs. But that was unclean animals. But anyway, all these pigs there, they said, if you're going to kick us out of this man, let us go to the pigs. And you notice how demons appear to be, we're going to be studying them, by the way, a little plug for you here. Bill's teaching his last class this Wednesday on Jesus said this about that. And the next week, I'm going to start a class on Wednesday nights about angels, demons, the devil, and spiritual warfare. And we'll talk a lot about demons and angels and the devil in that class. So probably about 6 weeks or so, we'll study that lesson, that topic. But so all these pigs go crazy, don't they? And they rush over the cliff and they go into the lake. The Sea of Galilee, and they all drowned. Now that was a major financial loss for the people that owned those pigs too, wasn't it? You imagine having 2,000 pigs and losing them all at one time, the drowning? So those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and the countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. And when they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed, and in his right mind. And they were afraid. Isn't that interesting? When this man is demon-possessed, he's crazed. He's naked. He's roaming around, running around everywhere, to and fro. When he encounters Jesus, and Jesus heals him, he's sitting down. He's got his clothes on, and he's in his right mind. What happens when you encounter Jesus? What kind of a change can he make in God? Who could have helped? Could this man help himself? Could he have solved his own problem? Couldn't do it, could he? Could anybody else help him? They tried binding him, maybe to keep him from hurting himself and hurting other people and all that. They tried binding him. Nobody else could help him. The only person who could possibly have helped this man was Jesus. And Jesus came across the lake specifically to meet this man. It was a divine appointment. Jesus came to help this man. And after he did, that man's life was totally different, wasn't it? And the people who saw it were frightened by it. Wait a minute, we remember who this guy was, and now look at him now. Have you ever seen somebody who obeys the gospel and becomes a Christian, and all of a sudden you see a radical change in their life? They're not at all like they were before. All the things they used to say and do and the place they went and the people they hung out with, all that, that all changes. And you just see they're not the same, they're different. That Jesus has really had an impact in their life. So those that had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. And the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. Isn't that interesting? Jesus comes to town, makes a huge difference in a man's life. And they want him to leave. They don't want him around. They're afraid of him. Don't want him around. They don't like the fact he's there. You know, when people like Jesus to come in and make some improvements in people, make them, you know, maybe drink a little less, maybe lie just a little bit less, maybe do a little bit less carousing and all that. Just, you know, clean it up a little bit. But they don't want a radical change in your life. What do people do when you have this radical change in your life and beginning to follow Jesus? How do people react to that? And when Jesus shows up in town, you know, we tried a couple of months ago to go out to the street bash and sit out there and pass out Bibles. And what happened? We don't need you around here. We don't know Bibles around here, right? We were told that church is that's bad, right? And that kind of thing is not unusual. I mean, that's nothing strange about that. We shouldn't be shocked by that or think that's strange that people don't want Jesus around, don't want Bibles around. You know, you can go to work and you can take any kind of book you want to and any kind of magazine you want and do all that kind of stuff, and people are probably okay with that. But bring a Bible in? You can't be bringing one of those around here. You know, don't bring a Bible to work. No, we don't want that around here, right? So there's people react to Jesus and his word in a negative way many times, and these people did. But it goes on to say, as Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged him to go with him. He wanted to follow Jesus. I mean, can you imagine? Jesus has saved his life. The change Jesus has given in his life set him free, and he wants to be with Jesus. That's no surprise. But Jesus did not let him. He said, go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy upon you. So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And all the people were amazed. You know, and he seems to be about the only one right now believing in Jesus to follow him. But when Jesus comes back later to feed the 4,000, there's thousands of people there. I don't know if they're all affected by him or someplace else. But the fact is, there's a lot of people that are interested in seeing Jesus when he comes back next time. So I want to take that statement in Mark 5, verse 19. Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you. I want to reflect on that just a few minutes before we end the lesson today. Jesus leaves and leaves a man behind. Won't let him go with him. Leaves him behind and gives him an assignment, doesn't he? He goes from being a maniac to being a missionary. From being somebody that's bound up in all this stuff that's ruining his life. And now he's a changed man. The best way to share the gospel is your transformed life. Do you ever realize that? People say, I can't go share the gospel. People, I don't know enough verses. I don't really know the Bible well enough. I can't do the charts and outlines and explain all the stuff and answer all their questions and all that. You know what you can do? You can tell somebody how Jesus affected your life. How you were before you met Jesus and now how you are, now that you have. That's not anything anybody can argue about, is it? Who knows that story better than you? Who can tell that story better than you? Who can argue with you and fight with you? You say, look, I was doing all these things here, but now I'm not anymore. Now that I'm a Christian, I've quit all that. When I met Jesus, he changed me. What's anybody going to say about that? One of the most powerful things you can do is tell people your story. I read a story about a fellow that ran into a neighbor, and the neighbor's in a big hurry and everything, and they said, before you go, I got to tell you something. He says, what do you want to tell you? He says, I obeyed the gospel. I became a Christian. My life is so much different now. Jesus came in. And the person said, you know, I've been thinking about doing the same thing myself. Tell me what happened. And they got to tell the story about how they had learned the gospel and had obeyed the gospel. And that person wanted to do it too. You just don't know when you tell your story. But the best way to convince other people of the gospel is to show them how it's affected and changed your life. You may be the only Jesus some people see, right? We sometimes talk about the five gospels. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and the gospel according to you. And the only one a lot of people are going to read is the gospel according to you. And they're either going to be a Bible or a libel. You're either going to be a good representative of Jesus or a bad representative. They're either going to get a good opinion of Jesus or a bad opinion of Jesus by looking at you. To let people see Jesus in you instead of trying to convince them. Don't argue with them. Don't fight with them. Let them see Jesus living in you. How do you argue against a good example? Acts 4:13, you remember the apostles standing before the Sanhedrin council? And it says they were ignorant and unlearned men. They took note of them that they had been with Jesus. Have you ever had somebody come up to you and say, you're a Christian, aren't you? You ever had somebody come up and say, you must have been with Jesus. How do they tell that? By the way we talk, by the way we act, by the things we do, by the way we live. They look at it and say, that's what Christians do. And they took note they've been with Jesus. We sometimes sing the song, "Let the beauty of Jesus be seen in me." Right? Let the beauty of Jesus be seen in me. Let people notice it. Mirror, mirror on the wall, do you see Christ in me at all? It's a good question. Do you see Christ living in me? I hope so. Go and tell somebody what great things Jesus has done for you, is what he told the man. And in Acts chapter 4, 19 and 20, when the apostles were told, quit preaching about Jesus. Don't mention his name anymore. Don't preach anymore about Jesus. What did they say? Whether it's right in the sight of God to listen to you more than to God, you judge, for we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard. The things we've seen and heard, we've got to say them. We've got to talk about it. We can't keep it quiet. We have to tell you what we've seen and heard. The Apostle Paul in Acts 18, verse 9, an angel spoke to him, the Lord spoke to him during the night and told him, don't be afraid, but keep on speaking. Do not be silent, for I have many people in this city, in the city of Corinth. Don't be afraid. Keep on speaking. Don't be silent. Keep telling people. There's people here that need to hear it, people that will listen to it, and people will accept it. My question to you is, what's your story? What's your story with Jesus? What's your story with becoming a Christian? Do you have one? Don't we all like to hear good news? We say, tell me something good. How great would it be for you to tell somebody something good about how your life was changed because of what Jesus did for you? Wouldn't that be good news? That's gospel, isn't it? So what has Jesus done for you? Have you got a story? Have you thought about it? Could you tell it? Do you have a story? Say, this is how Christ has impacted me. I'm afraid a lot of people sitting around say, I don't have a story. Jesus hasn't really made that much difference in my life. I'd worry about that, wouldn't you? Worry if Jesus hadn't made a big difference in your life? And if he has, I mean, everybody's not going to have as dramatic story as this guy, this demon-possessed man. We're not all going to have that dramatic of a story. But we've got some kind of a story about what Jesus did for us, how Jesus changed our life. So share with other people. He said, go home and share with your family, your neighbors, your friends, the people you associate with every day, the people that know you, the people you're in contact with. Share with them what Jesus has done for you. Remember 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15? Be ready at all times to answer anyone who asks you to explain the hope you have with meekness and fear. Always be ready to give an answer. It doesn't mean here you got to be able to figure out what the two scrolls are back in the book of Ezekiel and who the giants were in Genesis 6. That's not what I'm talking about. But you've got a smile on your face. You're happy. You're rejoicing. You don't cuss. You don't do these things other people do. Why? Why are you that way? Can you tell somebody why you're that way? What's happened in your life? Oh, I'm just a pretty nice guy. I just tried to be nice and all that. Is that the answer? Or is it Jesus is in my life and because of him, I'm different than what I was before? I like 2 Corinthians 4:13 where Paul says, I believe and therefore I speak. If you have faith, if you have confidence, if you have trust in something or someone, you'll have something to say about it, won't you? Believe, therefore I speak. In John chapter 9, verse 25, I love that's one of my favorite stories in the Bible, the story of the blind man. Man born blind. Jesus heals him. And the Pharisees keep quizzing him and asking him questions, giving him the third degree. Who is this man that healed you? Well, how did he do it? What did he say? And finally he says, you've asked me so many times, I wonder, do you want to follow him? We're not following him. He's a sinner. That's funny. You say he's a sinner, but he opened my eyes. Who's ever heard of somebody opening the eyes of a blind man? And you think he's a sinner? You think he's against God? But then he said, you know, a lot of things I don't know, but one thing I do know. I used to be blind, but now I can see. You may not know everything about the Bible, but do you know that you used to be a certain way and now you're different because of Jesus? Can you say that? Can you tell somebody that? That's powerful. That's powerful. And I think we all ought to be able to tell a story about that. So what has God done for you is what I'm asking you this morning.